Hello and welcome to a Burnt Wonderland, very much unscripted. I am your host, Chris, and no funny intros tonight. In fact, this show is going to be interesting. I'm going to go with the word interesting. As you can probably tell, Gimli is not here this week. He's got a lot of things on his plate right now, so he will be back. Don't worry, he's fine. Danny will be sending him his leftover Chinese later on to make sure he's fed and watered. So it's all good. But I'm joined by quite the panel this evening. First of all, well, he has to be here. They see him rolling. It's Danny, the GFP. Good evening, Danny.
Hello from OG Central. I'm at OG. Oh, no, not am I? He's at my house.
No, he's... yeah. Well,
I'm videoing this, and I might put this on YouTube later, a little behind the scenes of how we managed to fucking try and make this work, because I forgot Jeffy isn't going to bring a set of headphones even from Canada, so we've got my old broken ones we managed to bodge together, and now we have to, like an old married couple, we have to mute in sync.
I love it. It's poor form, Danny, that you knew you had a guest and you couldn't even be bothered to buy him headphones. It's poor.
I didn't know they were that bad. But we've taken them apart, wow. And we've used some of this wonderful tape to stick it together. And we used Sean's laptop. And there you go. And we had a lovely Chinese for dinner. And OG gave me his special mug. I shall treasure it until Sean breaks it.
Oh, yes, he did give you a special. I know he said he was going to do that. So superb. Well, we should introduce the great man, really, shouldn't we? Sitting alongside Danny, never said that before, it is the one, the only, Mr. Jeff Holofrand. Good evening, Jeff.
How are you, fella? It's nice to be back on a pod. I am broadcasting live from the home of podcasting, or at least half a home of podcasting, here with the great man himself. And I got to stop from just staring at him with a massive man crush because he's sitting here with me, and I'm looking forward to a great evening. So nice to hear from you there, Chris.
It's good to see you again, having, of course, met you in person. We'll come on to all that good stuff in a minute. But I know that Dom is listening to this, I'm sure, and I know he has just one question and one question only, so I'm going to ask it straight away. Have you messed with Danny's tin labels yet?
Yeah, that is what I like to call a classic late night activity. So that will be, I'm going to try and wait Danny out, but of course he goes to bed at 8 a.m. So this might be a difficult mission. And if not, I might have to leave it for Dom himself.
It's going to be a tough stakeout if you're going to keep it like that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll introduce our other panelists then. We have... First of all, coming all the way from Poland, it is Mr. Lord Hillwood. It's Steve. Good evening, Steve. Hello, Steve. Oh, you're on mute, Steve. Try again.
Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Dan, OG and everybody. Yes, welcome from drizzly, grey, bloody horrible fucking autumns here, Warsaw.
It's, I take it it's wet then, a bit miserable.
Yeah, not very nice. I got soaked today a couple of times.
Yeah, I did enjoy your Snapchats the other day. I'll say that much. Your little trip around Poland, yeah? The fountain and all that. I was watching. I'm always stalking.
I was going off to Ogród Krasiński via the Murinov Fountain in the Jewish ghetto.
Did you? Well, you're here. You're safe. That's a bonus. Right, completing our lineup then. Another man I had the pleasure of meeting for the first time last weekend. It is our good friend David. It's Mr. Gunaholic. Good evening, David. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you, Chris. It was good to break bread with you on Saturday.
Indeed. Albeit brief, and it was too brief. We will do it again.
I couldn't join you, boys. You had a great afternoon, I think, and evening.
Oh, we did. Oh, absolutely. Yes, we did. And again, more on that later. Right. Well, thank you to all of our people in the chat. We very much appreciate you joining us. As we said in the intro, this is going to be very much an unscripted, uncensored, just random show. So we hope you like it. But we thought, given the fact we have the great OG on a live broadcast with Danny, we thought we'd just kind of shift things up a little bit this week. So there'll be no lone watch, no ladies. Well, there might be ladies, but not ladies football. There'll be no under 21s, no injury watch, no nothing. It's just literally going to be us sitting here talking as friends and sharing some experiences from the last week. We will, of course, be talking Arsenal because that's what we all love. So, Danny, I'm going to come to you first of all. Well, I suppose you and OG as a pair, really.
You can't have us as a pair. You'll get audio bleeding.
All right. Well, I'll ask you this question first of all.
Okay.
How did it feel for you being a man who, a co-founder of this podcast?
With the wonderful Mr. Gimli. Hello, Mr. Gimli, if you're listening or absolutely. Watching.
Stole my thunder there, but yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Whatever.
How did it feel for you when you sort of saw what happened on Saturday? For anyone that doesn't know, there's a Swansea game, which we'll come on to in a minute, and a great number of ABW people joined up as one. And how was that for you, Danny, knowing that you've helped create something that was so special for us all?
It warmed the cockles of my cold, dead heart. Even Sean said it was wonderful. It's really, really good, and I'm very happy for everybody, and I love to have been there. But the bloke who I used to go to all the games with, Matt, he's really busy at the moment, the Monkey Boy windscreen fitter, so he couldn't drive me down there. And the problem is, with my van, I have to get someone else to insure it, because most people don't have a vehicle, their own insurance, to drive any other vehicle unless you're really old. And so Sean's mum, she said she could drive me, but she's busy. And that's it. There's nobody else. But when Sean has had a year's no claims on her own vehicle, which is going to be beginning of December, then I'm going to try put her on my van. Then we're going to come down as a force of nature. I was thinking of WWF then, the natural disasters.
Earthquake and typhoon, yeah.
I think I'll be earthquake. Sean can be typhoon. So yeah, just really, really nice to see. Well, I wanted more pictures. But everyone's sending me messages going, oh, OG's the nicest bloke I've met. He's wonderful. You're going to love him. And so we tried to make a last-minute transfer to get Chris to get a couple of days off of work and come up here now. But just think whatever did I ask that would have been, Chris, if you'd have been here trying to get all three of us in my house to do this at the same time. Wouldn't have worked, would it?
I was going to say, I think it's safe to say it would have been a little bit of an awkward one to do. But it will happen, Danny. It will happen.
Well, yeah. Sean said, are you going to come over? And I said, yeah, I think Chris is going to come down for a couple of days before Christmas.
We can do
something similar to this. But getting back to your main point, it's I think everyone, Jeff was saying to me earlier, everyone has seen that maybe it's a good point if we try and meet up once a year. And now that I've got my new electric beep beep and I don't have to worry about hitting puddles and falling out, I'm going to jump into that four-wheel drive, go, 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 get in the van, come down there, and we can meet up at a game, maybe even meet up at a Barnet game or somewhere where we can all get in without having to worry about trying to get tickets. But yeah, it's really nice to see. And it's... Yeah, it'd be good if all 17 of us, I think there's 17 at ABW now, if all 17 of us could all get together and meet up somewhere. But the odds of everyone being able to do that, because we've got four people abroad, haven't we? One, two, three, four?
Yeah, four, yeah. I think it's four. Is it four? Jason, Dom, Jeff, who's the other one I'm missing?
Oh, five. Yeah.
Five.
Steve, opponent, obviously. Yeah, I've forgotten about Jason.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I thought Jason and then Wales. I mean, oh, there's another one, isn't there? So there you go.
Well, we should touch on what's gone on, of course, and we'll come to you, Jeff, next, because you hastily sort of planned this trip, and it was kind of one of those you were thinking about it, and you just went, no, I'm going to do it, and packed your bags and came basically across the other side of the world, and you arrived in London, and talk us through your initial experiences pre-Swansea.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's about 5,000 miles home, eight time zones. And although it was hastily planned, it's been a trip in the making for many, many, many years. Obviously, being an Arsenal fan for as long as I can remember and being rather old, it's been a long time in the making. And reaching out through the ABW guys, talking them through it, seeing who could meet up, getting the invites out. I was really excited. Now, it may have seemed hastily planned, but of course, I was waiting for the fixture list. So you wait for the fixture list, which is something. So that came out. Then you wait for the broadcasters to move all the games. So that came out. And then you look and you say, where are two home games? Because you want to maximize the visit. You want to see London. You want to see the Arsenal. I looked at that. We found two. I mean, it's Swansea and Middlesbrough. And then you say, well, is it possible we could have a Champions League game in the middle? And yes, it was. So then you watch the Champions League draw. And when Paris Saint-Germain came out of the hat, I went, yes. And then we got Ludogorets. So not the worst. I mean, obviously, it was a great show yesterday. I'm sure we'll come on to it. But while it seemed hastily booked, it's been planned for many, many years and had just so many great experiences this week, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But equally a highlight to the football that I've witnessed has been just meeting up with a lot of the guys and sharing a pint of beer or a pint of juice, as it were, or a Chinese takeout, as it was tonight here at the home of podcasting. It's been a tremendous experience, been absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, and what an experience it was. And again, what we'll probably try and do is we'll go through the games and we'll just touch on individual bits and bobs as we go through. So, David, I'll come to you next. Obviously, you're a regular frequenter of the Emirates and indeed Arsenal. How was the day for you leading up to the Swansea game and your experience of meeting some of us all?
That was a very different one, obviously. There's nothing quite like being in a Wetherspoons pub at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning. All human life is in there. But the guys eventually turned up. We had an excellent lunch where I got to meet a few more of you and discussed the hell out of the game to come. Now, whether anyone can remember any of it, I doubt it. I hope you've seen it, the replay, because I've only seen the goals again. But I can recall some of it.
It was, I was just going to say there's bits and bobs I can recall and bits and bobs that are a blur. But being a non-drinker, luckily, I can recall most of it fairly clearly. Uh-huh. Particularly the day anyway.
The show will be yours then.
Yeah, I'll try my best. Steve, just touching on the game a little bit then, coming onto the game. From your point of view, I would imagine you watched this on a fairly clear stream and enjoyed the performance. What was your sort of overall thoughts on the game? It was a victory. It was a bit of a thriller. Defensive worries maybe, but overall happy bunny?
I was happy with the result. There were times in there where you just thought, oh, no, this has got Swansea games of old written all over it. That familiar nagging bit in the stomach, like you forgot to eat your dinner and you're starting to, you know, feel your blood sugar dip. Because we had large holes in the middle of midfield. We weren't defending properly. Gave away two stupid goals, just switched off. And, you know, against a bigger team, you pay for that. We would have, against a bigger team, if we had carried on in that vein, we might have dropped points there. But we ground it out. We got 3 points. We walked away from it, moved on to the next game. And I think, you know, that's what they seem to be doing. What impressed me is Ozil, when he was substituted, going off shouting at him, you know, fight. Come on, you've got to fight for this. You've got to fight. So you can see that there is leadership on the pitch. They know that they've got to, at times, dig deep, and they are digging deep and grinding out the results. But I have to say that I sat there and thought to myself, I really don't hope I see this teabag of the front two in front of the defence occurring again. And sadly, last night we did see it in flashes, despite the result. But yeah, overall, it was pleasing. It was a good result, and there was some good stuff played.
I think you've made some excellent points there when you say that the worries, like we'll touch on last night again, but there's a few little creaks going. You sort of said they're going, oh, I'm not sure about that. And as I can tell you from being at the ground, we were very much having the squeaky bum time. And let's come back to Danny. In fact, we'll touch on now, Danny, because again, I guess you would have been asleep when this game was going on. But what
the Swansea
you...
game?
Yeah, or did you watch it live?
No, I got up because I had to organise the radio show because you weren't bloody here.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Going, oh, my kidney, puking. Actually, the last month, I puked 3 times during the game. And at one point, I'm being sick into a bag. Sean's holding the other point in the bag and I'm holding the mouse, click waiting for Jason to end it so I can click end show as I'm yucking. That's how much dedication I have to this show. Pod thing.
What a
stuff.
Lovely... what a lovely thought. Picture. Thanks for...
And I'm still waiting for my MBE for that.
MBE, it's your job.
Oh, yeah, sorry. True.
Yeah. what do you think of the game then? As I say, you're watching it from a screened place. Yes. Attacking side of things, should we focus on that? I mean, it's good to see us once again. Well, I say once again, it's good to see us lay the ghost of Swansea to rest for a little while because we haven't had the best record against, have we?
No, they have been our bogey team. They are the 21st century Bolton. I mean, they're both playing white and they're both our bogey team. They drive me up the bloody wall. And we should have hammered them last season. They kind of put the clamp on us winning the title last season. Because if we'd have beaten them at home like we should have done, we'd probably have done better and maybe even have won the title. The most impressive thing for me that day was Theo Walcott. Hit the bar twice. He could have had, what, 5-6 goals that game? They were absolutely ridiculous. They were terrible. Fabianski saved them quite a bit, but I think the thing that saved them the most was Theo's ability to have a brain and think, because when he has a brain and when he thinks about it, he overcomplicates things and then he misses. But when you give him, you've got a split second. If Jeff could click when I say that, that'd be good. He's got a split second. Do one of those click things I can't do. No, don't actually turn your mic. I can't do the click thing, can I? There, he thinks in a second. Thank you. And when he only thinks, oh, I can't do it, kind of with my fat fingers. And when he only has that length of time to think, he does it, doesn't he? That's it. And so
there we go.
Both of those were Ian Wright instant turn shoot goals. And the two chances that he hit the post or that he missed were chances where he went, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Ox setting him up twice was absolutely fantastic. As I like to say, the neutrals, if the neutrals watching that game, that was a ding dong, hum digger, slong ning nom, slobber knocker. That's the word I'm thinking of.
You're going to say slong then?
It was a slong snobber knocker.
It's a family show.
Snobber knocker. I'm getting this completely wrong, aren't I? It's a very good game for the neutrals. I loved it, and I'd much rather see games that are 3-2 like that to us and we win than see a 1-0. But I think Swansea did well to come back and do what they did. But that bloke Barrow, bloody hell, he was good, wasn't he? Apparently when
go on.
I'll say he was. They got him from somewhere in Sweden, I vaguely remember. And then when he was playing in Sweden, he got 10 goals in 19 games for the team that he was playing there. Then I think they may have loaned him to Swansea, and then Swansea bought him. Don't quote me on that. I'm just remembering from what I read on the day. And he showed the problem with playing Monreal at left back, that Monreal hasn't got pace. And I think that may have shown Wenger that it's maybe time to give Gibbs, hopefully over the last couple of years, that Gibbs hasn't been first choice. He has worked on his defensiveness because that's what he needs to do. But that Barrow was brilliant. I thought it's quite funny that we decided to double bag Barrow, and then they took Barrow off as soon as we brought him on to play two left backs against him. But that bloke, he's something else. Loved it.
Sammy Nils.
We let him.
Yeah,
but the problem is that he did have a good game, but he was allowed to have more than a good game because Iwobi decided that he was going to drift into the middle. He was going to drift over to the right. He was actually going to do anything but stay where he should be off the ball and didn't cover Nacho. So obviously any fullback faced with that sort of pace at the age of 31 like Nacho is will get exposed. As soon as Xhaka clumped him and got booked and got sent off, Barrow went off, didn't he?
Mm.
No, you're okay. I mean,
we were surprised he took him off, actually. We were quite surprised that he came off at the time, I think.
Well, he was injured.
Was he injured? Yeah. Ah, see, it shows what we do.
He got injured by Xhaka. Xhaka would have got a yellow card, but I mean, obviously, John Moss had a load of Swansea players around him and decided it would be better if he had a red, but it didn't help him. So, yeah. I mean, that was the problem that basically it won't be. Have you not noticed in games now, people are targeting Nacho? It's not because he hasn't got any pace. It's because he's got someone in front of him who's not putting the shift in that Walcott's putting in on the other side. You know, last season, it was Walcott not putting the shift in. So he might need to go and have a word with Uncle Theo and find out how to do it.
Uncle Theo. That's quite a creepy thought.
Well, Theo's 28, isn't he? How old's it will be? 18 or something?
Is he 19?
19, I think. 19,
there you go.
He'd be his uncle, couldn't he?
Yeah, no, you're right. And you make some fair points. I think it was a few of the things we could pick up on, definitely, sort of being there. And bringing it right back to you, Jeff, the experience, obviously, we met up beforehand and we met up in a chicken shop, didn't we? Mr. Fife chose the spot, had a little chat and got together. And myself and my friend Alex shot off to go ahead and we were going to go and pick up some tickets actually. And then it transpired that something happened and we found ourselves with quite the opportunity, did we not? So do you want to tell the listeners where we ended up, if they haven't seen already, where we ended up watching the game from?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was not only was it my first proper Arsenal game in the flesh, but also we managed to somehow luck ourselves into an executive box. So there was 12 of us, I think. We managed to get up there and got tickets. We're all together for the game. It was amazing just being there with everyone from the crew. I mean, I know Holick, you took your usual seat, but of course, a bunch of the guys from the podcast that you guys would all know, Jeff and Raj and Jason Davies had come up from Wales land. Myself, my friend Eric, Chris, and your friend Alex FK was there. He put in a performance, and of course met a lovely chap named I think it's John. I only know him as Sir Livers.
Yeah.
So if anyone,
yeah, John.
So. Just amazing. And then watching the game itself, there's some great points that I thought that Steve brought up. I mean, we looked so comfortable until Xhaka slipped on the ball and we gave him that half chance, and it was well finished by Sigurdsson. But up until that point, we looked very, very confident. And I also really like the point that Steve brought up about Iwobi and Monreal. It does seem like Iwobi, just being in his youth, he's still trying to get that balance right on the wing. And he's left Monreal a few times. And watching the game, and I have a story for later, but watching the game, it sort of stood out. It was really only about a 15 or 20-minute period where they really got at Monreal. And of course, Barrow was the name, right? Barrow came off because he was hurt. But, you know, defensively, we looked a little bit in shambles, just a couple bad moments before Ozil, you know, his goal was spectacular. And I know you're probably hinting at that, Chris. I'm a little bit all over the map here thinking about how the day, because that's how all my memories are kind of coming back of this, that it was 3-1 at one point, but we watched that Ozil goal and we stood up and cheered, and it was just fantastic. And then going through the photos the next day on Arsenal.com, you can actually see all of us up in the box celebrating that goal with Ozil in the foreground. So I've got a story I'll tell about that in a little bit, but yeah, it was a magical day. And you know, game. The last 10 minutes were a little bit squeaky bum time, as they'd say. I heard a few choice words from a few people who don't usually use choice words, and that was also a highlight, Jeff Arsenal. But it was a great experience being there with everyone, being up in a corporate box. I went on to experience down on the pitch last night, so we'll talk a little bit more about that or in a proper seat. But what a great experience to go through that with a bunch of you guys and all of my friends. So fantastic.
And we should say, of course, to our listeners listening in, we're not the corporate types. This was very much a last minute decision offered to us, and we couldn't say no just for the idea. Yeah. Being together as one, and it's my first experience in a box. I think it's the same for a few of us. So, you know, we enjoyed it. We loved it just being together. We were in no way paid by the club to do it or anything like that. So if anyone's asking, we can't help. I'm sorry. Let's come back to the game. David, what did you make of the goals? Obviously, you touched on Theo Walcott's couple of goals. I think it's the second one in particular. He showed really good quick feet to finish. But we have to get your opinion on Mesut's goal. It was just the technique, the power. We'll come on to his hat trick from last night as well. But he's adding this to his game this season, isn't he? The ability to finish from all different parts of the pitch. And that goal was a real highlight, I thought, from being there.
I think that Mesut is really benefiting from the way that the front four are operating. In the absence of Giroud, we kind of have to be a fairly flexible force up there. And with the interchanging, particularly between Alexis and Theo Walcott, it's creating opportunities as well for Ozil to come in and join. And as you say, his volley last Saturday was an absolute joy to behold. We were kind of more or less behind it and saw as the moment he hit it, that was going in the roof of the net. And tremendous technique, and he's become a player. He's going to become a player that we're going to be talking about for years. And you mentioned Theo's goals as well. And you're right, they were opportunist goals. And as Danny would say, he didn't have time to think about them. But particularly the first one, where the defender really hasn't made a decision to deal with the ball. And he somehow got in front of Fabianski. And whilst I feel for Fabianski, you have to say he was 50% responsible for Theo even having a chance to get a foot on it. But the second one, as you say, the corner, it's unfortunate their clearance hit was it Sigurdsson in the back of the head and dropped for Theo? And his reactions were just instant. So it's good to see him scoring goals. It's good to see him playing well. It's good to see the confidence running through the side. Yes, there are one or two defensive issues. I'm sure we'll come onto those again later. But they are an absolute pleasure to watch at the moment. And I'm glad you boys got a chance to watch it all in that place.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was an unforgettable day. But Steve, there was one incident that we should touch on. A few people prior to us signing Granit Xhaka, a few people that know him a bit better than us, or had seen him enough, I'd certainly been one of them to see him a few times, would be worried about his temperament, his rashness, his desire to stop a player at all costs. He definitely did stop. I think it was Barrow, wasn't it? He definitely did stop him, and then saw red. Now, people are suggesting that it was a harsh red. I think the manager said it was a dark yellow. I love that expression. What was your thoughts on it? Because I can see why he got sent off, even if it was just a professional foul.
It was a professional foul, but he was in his own half. He certainly wasn't denied a goal-scoring opportunity. For me, you know, yeah, it was a bit of a spiteful foul. But it was a yellow every day of the week. John Moss was going to give me a yellow card. And he then was surrounded by Swansea players whining. And he gave him a red. But you got, but John Moss was trying to give Swansea a draw. And if you want to talk about a referee's performance, if whoever the referee's assessor was that day must have had a field day. He missed a triple foul on Alexis in the first half. He missed numerous fouls on Walcott. He got four offsides wrong. He got several other major decisions wrong as well. And his linesman was an absolute idiot. Gave Ozil offside three times when he clearly wasn't. And you know a referee's had a bad game when you win the game and you're still forced to comment about how bad the referee was. And that decision with Xhaka just capped it off, because that's never a red. Certainly not a straight red. You know, was it violent? Was it a Stevie Williams run up and smack him or kick him 6 foot in the air? No, it was a clip at the back of the heel and he fell over. It was a free kick and a booking. And it was a total overreaction by Moss. And the reason why Arsenal haven't appealed it is because they know that Moss is an arrogant shit who won't admit his crap. You shouldn't be reffing, to be honest. They know he won't back down, and they know the FA will back him, so and increase Xhaka's ban. That's why they haven't appealed it. But never in a million years. I mean, I'll put it this way: if every referee like John Moss did on that decision, Spurs would finish every game with seven players. Dyer, Ali, Rose, and Walker would be sent off every single game.
Yeah, it was strange. I know we thought in the ground at the time, and we were all frantically trying to find out whether he'd done something, because we just genuinely thought he had just made a professional foul to stop a player who was getting away. And I know some people have got people put in the chat there that we've been crying out for that kind of player for a long time. And whilst I agree, it's maybe just a little nudge to maybe just remind Granit that sometimes you've got to be a little bit more streetwise in the Premier League and just time things a little better. But nevertheless, we won't take the shine off of a good performance and a good victory. And I just want to get, let's go back to David for this one. David, what, on the grand scheme of things with the day's results as well, obviously we saw Manchester United and Liverpool put each other to sleep on Monday night. Manchester City missing two penalties hilariously and drawing with Everton. And really Chelsea were the only victors of the day other than us. So all in all, are you sort of quietly confident that we're on to a good thing here, and taking advantage of others dropping points is always got to be a good thing? Would you agree?
Absolutely. And for a while there, it looked very much better as well, because we were someone around us obviously was listening to what was going on. And when both Spurs and City were losing and we were comfortably ahead, it looked like it was going to be a much, much better day. I've been trying to remind myself ever since, though, or kind of all through this month, it's only October, and the time to start getting excited is really going to be the turn of the year if we're still there and we can keep some form running and confidence running into January. Then I'll start to get really excited. But yes, you can't help but maybe get a little bit carried away with what we're doing at the moment, 7 wins in a row, unbeaten in 11. You can't ask for more than that. And particularly when it looks as though City are going to have a good season as well, we need to keep that up.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Jeff, let's come back to you then, and let's sort of have a look at the rest of the day. So obviously we got the result in the end. We then stuck around for a little bit afterwards. I know Raj made you make a little speech in front of the guys in the box. That was quite emotional. Got quite a nice little picture of that as well. The whole experience of the day for you in the ground and your thoughts sort of coming away from the game. And we ended up, of course, in the Tollington, where I'm not going to disclose the amount of beers you had, or indeed the amount of beers Jace had. Jace had a lot more than Jeff. But you met some other faces that might be worth mentioning as well.
No one likes a drink counter, Chris. Let's put that straight.
Sorry, a drink counter. It didn't really count, I promise.
He did.
We all had less than Dave, so it doesn't really matter in the end, does it? No, you know, I knew you're gonna. I mean, obviously, you're gonna ask this question because we've been chatting about it all week, and Raj had asked me after the game how I felt, and it's really tough to put it into words. It was an emotional day. It was always going to be an emotional day. I was trying to figure out exactly how old I was when I first started following Arsenal, and I figure it was probably between 8 and 10 years old. Never been to see a match. It's not something I talk about a whole lot, but I've never actually been here in the flesh. I've had opportunities to come over, but it's a long ways, and I've got a family and a job, and things add up, and your life kind of slips past you, and the next thing you know, you're like, when am I going to get to see the Arsenal, and when am I going to get over there? And the Highbury years passed me by, and I'll always regret that I didn't make it over for that. So when it finally happens, I mean, a lot of people will travel and they'll come and they'll see the Arsenal for the first time, and it'll be absolutely emotional. It'll be magical. It'll be something special. And then, you know, for me, being able to experience it with the guys from the pod, you know, Andrew Fife, who's been a spectacular host, and he is a legend. Meeting Dave Gunnar Holick at the Wetherspoons there, he skipped breakfast, everybody. He was going straight. He was getting stuck in early. Of course, Chris, you came up. You traveled a long way to be there, and thank you for the shirt, by the way. I don't know if you can see it, not on my webcam, but you'll be able to see it on Danny's, and then and Jason Davies as well, being able to meet up with that scoundrel and have a really long evening with him. He was the one that made sure I made it back to the flat okay. And I know I'm missing a bunch more of the guys. But Raj asked me, and I said, you know, there's people out there, they'll try and convince you there's no such thing as a perfect day. They're liars. I'll tell you straight up, it was an absolutely perfect day. I think, you know, if I were to think in terms of fever pitch, I'm going to change the analogy a little bit. But when he talks about wanting something your whole life, and there's people out there that don't have that. My wife doesn't understand this thing. She doesn't understand it all. All she knows is it's important to me. But she's never wanted anything her whole life. I've wanted this my whole life. And it was emotional, and it was special, and it was everything that I wanted to be. And every day has been perfect. And if you're a fan that lives far away, do it. Get on a plane and do it. Don't make excuses. If you can afford to do it, get over, see the Arsenal. You'll be surprised how emotional you get. There's good people here. They took care of me for the rest of the night. We had a lot of beer. We went out dancing and had a curry. And it was just magical. The whole day was just magical. And I'm sorry if that type of emotion is not your thing, but it's my thing. So my thanks to everyone who made that happen.
Well said. And I missed the dancing and the curry. I hope there's pictures that will be off record that I can look at somewhere, because that's...
There are, and I wouldn't say you missed it.
I don't know. I have this funny feeling that Mr. Davies can throw some serious shapes. I just have this feeling.
Coming out of the curry, there was no one left in the curry restaurant, so Andrew decided it would be a good idea to sing about the Arsenal at top voice. So we did that. We carried on down through Islington, just off Upper Street. And at one point, Andrew said, "That's Boris Johnson's house." And then proceeded a round of very loud singing about how much of a wanker Boris Johnson is. So I think we've done you Boris proud there.
Top man.
Yeah, top yeah. man. And it was just loud.
Only a shame he didn't do it through the letterbox.
Yeah, well, I'm not allowed to talk about that legally.
I see. Steady on.
I'm quite surprised Fife didn't have his butler bring the coffee, bring the curry down as well. That's poor form. He needs to have a word with Jeeves. So now, God bless him. He's a lot bigger in person, by the way, Mr. Fife. He's a unit, I've decided. I didn't realise he was as big as he is. Yeah,
you mean he's trying to say he's a fat bastard?
He's a very, very tall gentleman.
I see.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should also give a shout out. Jeff, you met, oh, goodness me, name escapes me. What was the chap's name?
FK and Jeff, Raj, Livers.
The chap off, the chap off of Twitter. Oh, goodness me.
Dennis,
thank you. There you go. Got there in the end. Yes, you met Dennis.
I can't remember his handle. I think it's Phantom Menace or something, but he was a great guy. Yeah, really good guy.
And also Lucy Gooner as well. She was
Gooner as well. She was she was with the Holic himself, and I met some of other Holic's mates, and everyone was really friendly. It was great, really great.
You were very lucky you weren't kidnapped by the bad women of the 12 pins, actually.
There's still 3 days.
Hence why they didn't go to the 12 pins.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he might not have escaped with his trousers or his life or his liver.
Or any of the above, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, we should say everybody was fantastic, and I can confirm that Jeff did not sign any autographs. He flat refused, even though many people asked. So moving on, right? Well, we'll move on to last night's game then, and Jeff will touch on your stories of you had another little trip out, didn't you, on Tuesday, which we'll come back to before we do the questions. But let's have a look at Ludogorets. Danny, let's start with you. You've been very quiet. 6-0. I had no internet last night, so I struggled to. I was kind of trying to watch three games at once, and then I had no internet, hence no ABW radio. Thank you very much, John, for filling in, by the way. But what did you make of the game? 6-0. You can only beat what's in front of you, all the cliches, but there's some really good performances last night, wasn't there?
Oh, I'd say so. I mean, I'm looking at Opta now. I mean, who scored? And they use Opta stats, apparently. And both the Ox and Ozil both got 10 out of 10. And Sanchez got a 9.2. Coughlin got a 9. It was, I mean, Ospina only got a 7.5. But I think that's because on the odd occasion that he did get anywhere near the ball, he just did brilliant saves. And I think early on, he stopped us from conceding a goal, which would have made a completely different match. Because that their goal, Stonianov, and I wouldn't like to have been at the car wash he works at on the M11 this morning, because he probably was in a really bad mood. Because I think he works in a car wash because he had the physique of someone who works in a car wash, and he played like a player who works in a car wash. I don't even think he'd have made it into the Pirates team, would he? He was not very good
right
at
now.
All. No, he's got a face that scares horses, and horses aren't scared of much. They had a couple of decent players. I thought Cafu and that Palomino, although how he didn't get a yellow card in the first half with his constant, right, with Ozil, just shoved him out of the way a couple of times. And just that whole thing, we've managed to miss our new formation of 4-2, the rest of you play wherever the fuck you want. That kind of formation is really causing trouble in the Premier League. No one can deal with it. And in Europe, wow, this team are a half-decent Bulgarian team. The Bulgarian League with CSK Sofia, they're not a bad league. And for them to come here and be absolutely ruined, I mean, just looking at, we had 19 shots on goal. 19 shots. How many of those were on target? Oh, I suppose I should click on the button, really, shouldn't I? Of those 19, 12 were on target. What a fantastic ratio. But the five of those we had blocked from the five that I suppose he did stop from going in. But they had 56.6% possession. When was the last time a team won? I suppose somebody might know this, stupid asking. But when someone lost 6-0, but had 56% possession, I mean, I thought that's got to be a mistake. That can't be true, but it seemingly was. But the way that Ozil did that, and I saw someone put up a GIF on Ooh, pardon me, put up a GIF on Twitter of Ozil when he picked up the match ball and he did that thing where you kick it back with your left foot, catch it in your shin, put it up in the air, over behind you, and then caught it on his foot, bounced it, and then walked away as he was walking off the pitch. Did I take it you saw that?
I did.
Oh, man, that was fantastic.
After the event, yeah.
Oh, he did that before each goal. So it was just amazing. And I thought the Ox was fantastic on when he came on Saturday against Swansea, when he put those two balls in for Theo, that he should have scored both of them. And he continued doing it now. So not only is Ozil having the season that we have all hoped he should have had since the beginning, the Ox is now scoring goals. The Ox is setting up goals. He wasn't on very long. And then Cathola was brilliant. Cocklam was brilliant. I'm not going to talk about our defence because they did their job. They kept a clean sheet. And if you want to be a glory player, you don't play in defence, and you want to get all the things. But actually, one point when Koscielny made a clearance in the second half, not only did he take the ball off of the bloke, he cleared the ball to nearly the halfway line along the floor, and that was almost a tackle pass. I think he should copyright that and have it as his own, because that was just fantastic. The whole night was just brilliant, and I just loved every aspect of it. And even though Sanchez only got one goal, it's just great seeing him going in every position. But That front four doing what you want, it's just a thing of beauty to see even players coming in and out of that lot. You could have played Ox on the right, you could have played Iwobi, you could have played, and then when Perez came on, or Lucas, I'm not sure which one we should call him yet, when he came on, to have got two assists in that short length of time, partly Ludogorets had given up, but still, you're not going to just pack your bag up and go home, are you? You're still going to put up some kind of defence. But for them to for him to come on and do that, so he's just biding his time, and it won't be long before I think he'll be out to start a game, because we've got a lot of games coming thick and fast with the Champions League, the Premier League, and with the League Cup game coming up. I think if we're playing Reading, he might do a Walcott and get four in the game against Reading as we beat them 9-5 or something. But to sum it up, fantastic game, loved it. And like David was saying, it was that 11 goals we scored or something, or 11 games unbeaten. I can't remember what he said, but he said you can't ask for much 11, more than 11 that.
11 games unbeaten.
Yeah, and 7 wins in a row.
11 games unbeaten, but we've won the last 7.
Yeah, that's what they're. So as David just said, that, I mean, whatever, you can't want anything more than that. We're averaging more than 3 goals a game in those in the last 7, in all of our 7 wins. Oh, I'm just, well, I'm going to shut up now. It's just brilliant.
No worries. That's very thorough. I like it. Steve, what did you make of it again, sort of watching from afar? Was it as comprehensive as you'd have expected? Because you touched earlier on the fact that there were some defensive concerns. Cafu, Marcelino, a couple on the counter-attack. Ospina had to be at his best at times. Do you sort of take a cynical view from it, or are you more in the camp of, no, we won and let's get on with things?
I think the pragmatic view would be more to the point. I mean, David Ospina made, I think, 3 saves in the first half, which, you know, at one point he stopped, came out superbly and just ripped the ball from underneath the guy in a one-on-one situation. He does it perfectly as well. That took the sting right out of them for 5 or 10 minutes. He was indulging himself in some real time wasting, winding him up. And he's very professional doing that. And it, what it does is it takes the momentum out of the opposition's game. It flattens their mood out. And he made a couple of important saves as well. And I found it rather ironic at half-time that he's going off actually a hero. And there is the villain of the piece, Payton, our bloody goalkeeping coach, who's turned everybody into a Morris dancer, waiting for him by the tunnel there. But I think, you know, the fact that David Ospina had to do that comes down to the two villains of the piece, which was Cazorla and Coquelin, who sat in front of the back four. Coquelin, I don't know what he was doing. He decided to go a bit sort of like Paul Pogba and do a Houdini for a while. Whether he was sort of thought it would be an easier game, or whether he thought he could just go forward, it was too easy to walk through the middle of them. The problem was it was too easy for them to walk through the middle of us. They were just like getting the ball. The two players you named, Cafu in particular, just wandering down the middle of the pitch, just bowling on in and seeing what happened. Cazorla, weirdly, looked to have got a knock in about 30 minutes in. He was down for a little while and he got back up. And I was surprised he came out for the second half. And then on about the 50th, 60th minute, he went off. And he had been, until he pulled off that outrageous 40-yard assist pass to for Ozil, he had up to that point and not been having a very good game, I didn't think. But I mean, what can you say about this front three or four? Where they decide it's going to be a three or it's a four. It's so fluid. It's so one goes in, one goes out, one pulls left, one pulls right. Defenders, they don't know what the fuck's going on. And it just frightens the bloody life out of them. And that's the thing, is so many mistakes get caused because of it. Somebody touching it earlier on. Something pops up in front of Walcott. He doesn't have to think, bang, it's in the back of the net. You know, but look at those two first goals last night. I mean, fucking hell. That first one was like something out of Robert Pires' playbook by Sanchez. What a goal. What a piece of art that was. He's come in with the ball. He's looked up. He's seen the keeper. He's just flicked it straight over his nut into the top right-hand corner from that angle. And all you can do is the same as when Pires chips Michael. You just have to stand up and applaud. And Walcott's goal as well, again, gets the ball in the edge of the area for layback of a whistle, looks up, sees the guy's not got it covered, thinks to himself, fuck it, I'll go for it. Because he's got confidence now. He shot brilliantly, technically finished goal. So the finishing was top-notch, but I have to come back to what Danny said. Pires really impressed me last night. Came on, he's not been playing much. First thing he did was it was a breakaway move. He saw he was going to could get the ball and he checked his run deliberately to make sure he stayed onside. And he assisted a goal straight away. And the second goal really came about through his hard work. I mean, obviously, Ozil a lot to do to finish that off. But I'm impressed by him.
Yeah, good words, very thorough, like it. And as you say, Pires definitely stood out. And people forget, of course, he's only been at the club for a short period of time. It's going to take a little bit of time to get settled on and off the pitch as well. Jeff, I believe you have a couple of thoughts on last night as well.
Yeah, it was amazing being there. And I like Steve's attitude about being pragmatic about it. When you look at the run of fixtures that we've had, while there's potential banana peels there, we really need to be winning these and going strong into the next international break, which I think is in early November. Sanchez, Alexis's goal was fantastic, and seeing it in the flesh was unbelievable. But then we did give them too much space, and the game kind of fizzled out for a bit. For a large portion of that first half, it was a little bit flat. We let them come on to us, and they had some really good chances. There was the one that nicked Kozielny's shin that hit the post and just went wide. And then, of course, the save that Ospina made or when he came out was unbelievable. It was very good. But I want to say all five of our goals were just really, really well taken. From Sanchez starting it, from Walcott putting his foot around the ball, but also hitting it with power. It was just a spectacular, spectacular hit. And I was right behind him and directly in line. And to see the movement on it as it went in, as he curled it with his foot, but also with power, was unbelievable. And to get that right before halftime, I think it settled us, because I think we went into the change room. I mean, we should be beating Ludogorets, but it had been a bit tight in that first half. And when we came out, I mean, what was it? It was under a minute, I think, when we scored our third with the Ox, and then of course there was the Ozil hat trick. But I want to talk about Pires, and that's why I initially said I wanted to come on to this comment, because I think Steve's right. There was a couple things I noticed about him. Listening to some of the YouTube scouts, they said he's not very fast. And what I did notice about him is, while it took him a little bit to get going, he was very pacey. And you could see he started his runs fairly early. There were smart runs. The second thing, and this was really evident in the first assist. So this was Ozil's second goal, where he came down the left-hand side. It was a great ball played through to him. And he hit it first time in between the 6-yard box and the penalty box. I think it was a little bit hard from where I was sitting. I was in sort of the west stand, about 10 rows up, but he hit it really hard with pace, and Ozil did really well to finish it. But what I liked about that is there's so many times where we attack down the wings and then we check our run and bring the ball backwards and allows teams to set up, and seeing him cross it first time like that, it was a little bit refreshing. And I actually said to Andrew, who's with me, I said, that was amazing. I'm really glad he hit that, because we could see it was just so quick and so decisive, rather than playing it back to Coughlin or if Cazola, I don't think Cazola was on the pitch at that time, but playing it back into our midfield and then sort of doing this tick-attack of stuff at the top of the box, which we sometimes do, playing it quick and decisively and a first-time cross into that corridor of uncertainty. It was it was amazing to see live, and it was really well taken. So I have to echo Steve's sentiments there. Perez really, really impressed me when he came on.
Yeah, some good shouts there, definitely. And we'll finish with David, because he's the only one who hasn't had a say on this game. So, David, what was your overall thoughts? And maybe just touch a little bit on where you see the group, because PSG winning by 3-0 against Basel, it looks like, or it certainly seems as though it's going to be a shootout between Arsenal and PSG at the Emirates for top place. And maybe, just maybe, we might actually win a group and probably still draw Barcelona, but we'll come on to that later. So what was your thoughts overall?
Very much in the school of thought of Jeff and Steve as well about the first half. And that's really where we conceded the lion's share of possession. They weren't a bad side. They opened up. I thought the first half played very well. And at half time, I thought not only did we need that second goal, but I wasn't comfortable at 2-0 that we would be able to hold them at bay. As it happened, scoring that third goal in the opening minute of the second half seemed to knock the stuffing right out of them. And also we had Coquelin made great improvement in the second half. I didn't think he was that bad in the first, in all honesty. But in the second half, I thought he was outstanding. Hence why I opted to have that mark of 9 for him on the night. If you looked at his total performance, I thought it was fine. In terms of the group, it puts us in great shape because we've got a goal difference advantage as well. And I don't think that anybody else will put 6 past Ludo Goretz. My one concern is that we have, I think, 2 away games when we go back to Ludo Goretz and when we go to Basel, where we're expected now to win comfortably. And I think both of those are still a potential banana skin, because if Ludo Goretz score first, then it's a totally different kettle of fish. So not 100% confident, but I think as long as we keep the attitude right, keep the confidence high, then yes, I think we've got every chance of taking that first place in the group.
Yeah, me too. And as an avid French football watcher, I can tell you that PSG won last night. They could easily have been beaten or drawn. Trust me, they won 3-0, but Basel had at least 3 very presentable chances. And on another night, they might have taken points off them. They're not the side they used to be. So
the bar 3 times, Chris, but PSG
they did,
and the ref- Basel, and the referee seemed determined to give PSV every helping hand he could. In fact, I even checked to see it wasn't John Moss, actually.
It might have been in disguise, possibly.
I did feel for you because your friend Cavani scored.
Well, you know, he is scoring goals at the moment, Steve, in fairness. But I would ask you to maybe just have a quick look at the teams he's scoring against and indeed the minutes or times he's scoring these goals.
Exactly.
I.e. 2-0 up and cruising last-minute penalty goals. Oh. So, Edinson,
yes, it was a penalty. It was awarded. Because he tripped himself
up. Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
You're right, Jeff. So,
you know, I bless him. I'm sure he doesn't give a monkey's what I think of him, to be fair. But I'm happy with the strikers we've got. Thank you very much. Right, Danny, anything else that you want to discuss? Actually, before I come back to you, just quickly, Jeff, I just want to go back to your travels again very briefly, because there's 2 stories that I want you to tell. First of all, just briefly, you went to Craven Cottage on Tuesday, scene of many an Arsenal win in the past, and indeed some terrible Arsenal performances thinking back, actually. But you went to Fulham Norwich. So as a sort of a slightly non-Arsenal perspective here, but how was that for you? How was that experience?
I think the less said about it, the better, Chris, to be honest with you. No, I mean, very briefly, I've wanted to see Craven Cottage for a while. You know, it's a very old stadium. It's probably held together with cellophane tape or cell tape. You could see the wooden stands, the cottage, and it was proper English football. It was not an exciting game. But I can die a happy man knowing I've seen both Cameron Jerome and Scott Parker play on the same pitch at the same time. And I think that's, other than that, what sticks out is the walk from the tube station to the ground is amazing. It's on the River Thames. You're through a park and that was about it. That's all I really need to say about it on an Arsenal podcast. It was just something I wanted to do. And it was probably what I expected, to be honest, given it was Fulham Norwich.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's, and yeah, like you say, it's a not, it's one of those places good to visit, you know, just to say you've been there. It's a proper old fashioned stadium in the era that they are fast disappearing. But a more fun story would be what happened to you. Was it the day after or the day, or was it yesterday? You went for a little wander in the area of Highbury, and you met a rather interesting gentleman. Do tell us.
Well, I mean, there's two very brief stories. I mean, the first one, which I know the one you're alluding to, I'll tell that one second. But the first one was that we did a Legends tour of the stadium with Nigel Winterburn. And that was fantastic. And what a guy Nigel Winterburn was. He was very nice to everyone. He took the time to chat. There were a lot of great questions. So, you know, obviously, who's the best player he's ever played with? And it was Dennis Bergkamp. Yes. So, and he said very clearly, he said, I'm trying to avoid any controversy here by saying the best player I've ever played with. And yeah, Dennis Bergkamp was the guy. He was asked Wenger or George Graham. And while he answered very politically, you could tell there was definitely some affection for his old boss and George Graham. And I think that really came down to the fact that his favorite ever game was Liverpool, the 89 Cup Finals, or the 89 league winner. He was there, actually. He didn't show me his ticket, but he was there. But it was very interesting in some of the stories he told. The one story that I really enjoyed was he talked about beating Everton on the final day of the season, of course, when Tony Adams scored that wonderful goal, and being in the change room and listening to everyone come up to the stadium and hearing all the fans outside of the locker room. And he said the fans had made up their minds that we were going to win that day. And the team took a lot of confidence from that. And I thought that was just an amazing story. He was a wonderful guy, Nigel Winterburn. If you get the chance to go and do a tour with him, I highly urge that you do. So there's that. So that was on Monday. But the story you were alluding to, Chris, and I mentioned this earlier, there was a few photos from the game on Saturday against Swansea after Mesut Ozil's goal, where he's doing his thumb suck celebration towards the camera, and you can see the box in the background with all of us with our arms in the air. So I thought, you know what, that would be a great keepsake to get that high definition copy and print it off and frame it and put it in my bedroom back home, much to my wife's surprise. So I actually talked to the armory, I talked to some people there, and they gave me Stuart McFarlane's email address. So I emailed him Wednesday morning, and I just said, I explained, and I laid it on pretty thick here, guys. So let's be honest. I said, woe is me. I'm from Canada. I said, sorry, several times in the email. I said, several times, you know, lifelong Gooner, all this, blah, 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 blah. I laid it on thick. And I just asked him if he would send me a copy of it. And I didn't think much of it. I didn't even think I'd hear back from Stuart McFarlane. And in the meantime, we went up to Highbury and we walked all around Highbury. We got in and we were actually in there, my friend Eric and I, taking photos. And we were taking photos of the East Stand from inside the ground. And my friend Eric says, hey, that guy's got an Arsenal coat on. And there was a guy walking towards us with a gym bag and shorts. And he had his cell phone in his hand and he had his earphones in. And I looked at him and I went, that's Stuart McFarlane. So I stopped him and he must have thought we were weirdos, because we are. And I said, are you Stuart McFarlane? And he goes, yeah. And he looked at me a little bit cautiously. And I said, well, my name's Jeff. I sent you an email today. He goes, you're the Canadian. And long story short, he's a lovely, lovely fellow. He's a huge Gooner. He lives in the area of the stadiums, and he'd been at the gym. I don't want to reveal all of his roots because I don't want people staking him out. But he'd been at the gym, and he said, "Yeah, absolutely, I'll send you that photo." And he true to his word, he sent me three or four with all of us in it, high definition, 4K, the best you can get. You know, he said, if I'm about, or if people are about, I think he'll be around. I think he's still promoting his book, which we should mention. I can't remember the title of it right now, but the one that he supplied all the photos and Amy Lawrence did put words to it. And he did mention to me he was going to provide some more copies up to the Tollington. So, you know, only fair to him that he gave me these photos for free, and he was an absolute gentleman. But I should say something about his book. So if you're looking for it, head up to the Tollington and get a copy of it. It's called The Wenger Revolution, 20 Years of Arsenal.
Just looked it up. So, good shout. And
unbelievable. You can't plan a day like that. He probably thought I was stalking him, which I wasn't, for the record. And, it was a complete fluke.
And if anyone wants to, as you rightly say, you can get that book. Danny, you're good at this. Amazon or your usual places. Go to the places where the person who writes it gets the most money. Don't go to the places where they get no money. So, Danny, you're probably better at this than I am, but you can find it online. Let's put it that way. Maybe we should reach out to him, Danny, and see if he wants to do any last minute publicizing of his book. So nodding away there, like it. Okay. Superb. Jeff, just from my point of view, and I don't know if David wants to add anything here, but just the whole experience, as we say, should point out that it was great to meet Jason for the first time as well, and Mr. Fife. I have had the pleasure of meeting FK before, and Jeff. Met Jeff's brother as well, we should say. Mr. Jeff Arsenal has a brother who was honestly the carbon copy of Jeff, but just slightly older, although he'd have you believe otherwise. And just couldn't have been nicer. And indeed, the people we shared the box with, who we didn't know at all, they were very nice as well. And just the whole experience was fantastic. And not a DJ in sight, which made it all the more better. Let's have a look at turning this over to the listeners, shall we, Danny? Anything you'd like to say before we take listener questions, or have indeed you got any listener questions there?
No, there was someone did send me a good one on the wonderful Twitter. But yeah, if anyone's got any questions, put them in the chat box now, and then we'll read them out. I'm just scrolling through our Twitter replies.
I've had one straight away. If you want me to go to this, from John Q at Johnny Boy, where Boy spelled BWOY underscore. He's just talking about Alexis. It's quite a surprising question, actually, because I must admit I haven't seen much of this in recent times. But he said, "Are you worried about Alexis's general body language, a lack of connection with the fans, rarely interviews, not shaking hands with Arsene Wenger on all the subs? Even when he scores, he jogs over to give the scorer a high five, but rarely see him go nuts with his teammates or applaud at the end of the match." David, you can have that one. Have you noticed this? Because you, as I say, you're in and around the games more often than a lot of us. Have you noticed that? Is John maybe reading into it too much? Oh, it's all gone quiet. Are you there, David?
The question there, Chris.
Sorry. Yes. Did you get that?
Yes, I'm here. I can't hear you either.
There. Danny, can you hear me? Can anyone hear me?
I didn't get the question.
Oh, I apologise. Basically, in short, I can hear you now. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, it's all very Dad's Army.
It's all going on. Don't tell me your name, Pike. Right, okay, I'll try again.
You love a live show.
You got to love it. In short, David, a gentleman from Twitter just wants to know if you've noticed Alexis looking a little bit down in the dumps, maybe not being connected with the fans, maybe being a little bit sulky at times, or not feeling like he's properly into it at the moment. Have you noticed that in person? I must admit I haven't recently, but have you?
No, I haven't. He didn't look best pleased about being substituted on Wednesday night, but then he never does. For those who have never had the opportunity to go to the training ground, he's a guy who likes to play football and lives for little else. And when they go training, he's always the first out there with a great big bag of footballs before everybody else. He wants to play 90 minutes every week. And I don't think he understands it was brought off last night to save him for Saturday. But bless his attitude. Anybody who wants to play as much as that, when you're as good as he is, that's a fantastic attitude to have. But no, I'll have a look and see what he does at the end of the game on Saturday.
It's a tough one, isn't it? I suppose because it's so easy to read something into something that's not there, or vice versa. I suppose it's very, very difficult when you're in a live situation. But no, I think he's all right, and a new contract will make him feel better. Maybe that's what he needs. Right, Danny, you've put a few in the box here. Do you want to pick out a few people to answer these?
Okay, well, the one from Twitter was from real Josh Dore. That's not the fake Josh Dore. Ignore the fake one. He says, if Ozil retires at Arsenal, can we mention him in the same legendary breath as Bergkamp? I'll ask Jeff first, because then I put myself on mute. Jeff.
Okay. You can hear me okay. All right. How do you want to handle that? He's got to get his game up and be more consistent. And that will sound tremendously harsh on Ozil, a guy who scored 4 goals in the last 2 games. But he has these moments, but then he just drifts off into the game. And even last night, there were moments in the first half where he was playing fairly well, but he was just drifting off. And I don't know. I think maybe the short answer is to say, if he can play at his absolute peak level now for the next, I don't know how many years he has left, let's say 7 years, 5 years even, maybe. The answer is maybe. But he's got to be at his absolute peak level. And that's not taking anything away from Mesut Ozil. He's a wonderful football player. But Dennis and Dennis's technique and the way he played players in and just the passion that he brought to Arsenal was unreal. So probably not, but maybe he can make a name for himself if he keeps it up.
Ah, there you go. What wonderful sinking of mute there. Steve, you've probably seen Bergkamp play a few times and you're no stranger to Mr. Ozil. What do you reckon?
Ozil's got a lot to add to his game to live up to Dennis. I mean, first of all, I can't ever imagine Ozil elbowing Bowyer in the head or lashing out and kicking people. I remember when he took out Lomas against West Ham, bust the good guy's front teeth out all over the shot, claret everywhere.
I remember that.
Just turned his back on the ref and walked off. Didn't even wait to be sent off. Just like, fuck you, I'm out of here. Ozil doesn't have a nasty side to him as far as I've seen yet. And he's got a long way to go on the finishing thing. He looks to be a ruthless finisher, that's for certain. Those goals, last 4 goals, he's got his little trademark of volleying into the ground deliberately, like Dennis used to pitch up and hide behind the defender and then bend it round his head and into the top right-hand corner. But, yeah, time will tell. As Jeff rightly said, you know, he's got 4, 5, maybe 6 years left at the top. He's got perform at his best for those 6 years to even be up there with a chance, because he's got one thing that Dennis didn't have: World Cup winner's medal. And he might in them next 4 years get another one. So, and even possibly a European Championship medal. So who knows? But we have to wait and see.
David, do you think there's any point in a mere mortal like Mr. Ozil trying to reach the heady heights, the heady? What's the word? Is it heady? I think it might be. Anyway, is there any point in him trying?
Yeah. Absolutely there is. And I hope he goes on making that effort. I hope he commits to another 3, 4, or 5 years with the club, because as Steve rightly says, he has to do it over a period of time to get anywhere near Bergkamp. But he certainly has a great deal of ability, hopefully adding more regular goals to his game as well. And he's part of a solving and that is showing some real quality. Now, if they do that over the course of this season, take it on over the coming years, then yeah, there's a chance, every chance, little cement on the outside the Emirates one day.
I think you've stopped speaking because your mouth stopped moving. Your internet's going a little bit wonky. I don't know what's going on. Try giving it a kick. You've gone all Carpenter on us. Talking of Carpenter, hey, have you got any wise words on this? Unmute yourself first, though.
Sorry, yes, I did a gimli there, my bad. I kind of agree with everything that the other two guys have said, if I'm completely honest. I think Mesut is a wonderful, wonderful talent. Yes, he does frustrate people at times. And yes, sometimes you look at him and go, oh, you know, maybe he could show a bit more enthusiasm at times. But that is the sort of player he is. I think the thing with Dennis is that Dennis arrived into English football and to Arsenal at a time when we needed him most. And he essentially transformed the club back to what it should have been again. You know, we were a club in the doldrums. We were a club essentially, you know, in the midst of scandal and we're really at a rock bottom. And he came in, and I know a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, Bruce Rioch deserves a lot of credit because he brought him in. That's bullshit. David Dean bought Dennis in, and he's the one that deserves all the credit for getting Dennis over the line. And I think he knew we needed a superstar player. And I've just been listening to Ian Wright's audiobook of his autobiography, and he makes a very clear point of making that point. And he says that when Dennis came into the changing rooms, everything changed. And he tells a fantastic story about how Dennis had a pair of pajamas that he brought with him to away games, and that he just walked the halls sort of in this full set of pajamas. He said he would talk to his wife before a game, and then he'd get into bed and he'd be asleep by 10 o'clock and you wouldn't hear him and you wouldn't see him until the next morning. And Ian Wright said he completely changed his whole mentality. And he said that he went out and bought a pair of pajamas because he said, what's good enough for Dennis Bergkamp is good enough for Ian Wright. And he said he's never worn anything but pajamas since. And I think that speaks of a man who transformed the club. And as brilliant as Meza is, and he is, you know, he's come in. He's another one of the galaxy of stars we've already got and have already experienced. Whereas Dennis just, I think he paved the way for so many that have come after him. So for me, it'll always be Dennis, but Meza on ability alone won't be far away.
And we don't mind him trying because it's fun while he tries.
Oh, yes.
That Ian Wright book, I just had a look at my bookshelf earlier with Jeff, and Ian Wright did a book a few years ago. What's the difference between the two books, or don't you know?
I think the one from previously, I think was it either ghost written or was it just like a, I don't think
he
it was
about his early days with 10 NB and stuff like that.
Maybe he's just trying to cash in. I mean, who could blame him? But it's a brilliant audio. It's 9 hours of audiobook.
How about the person who's talking, reading it? Is that a nice calming voice?
No, it's a proper Cockney guy. If you closed your eyes, it's not Ian Wright, obviously, but yeah. It's not far off. And it's a very, very good book. And he goes into a lot of the, you know, the ins and outs. He goes into quite a lot of detail about the George Graham era. And there's still quite a bit of ill feeling there, I would suggest. But yeah, it's a really, really good.
In the FA Cup final. And for that, Wenger will always have a bit of a disgruntled look from me. Could have brought him on. He brought on Platt.
Yeah, he doesn't hold him against him at all. And he said apparently when Arsene released him and he went to West Ham, if you remember rightly, on a free, he said that Arsene was completely ruthless. He said he's probably changed a lot now. He said he called him into the office with David Dean. He said David Dean was in tears, like genuine tears that a legend was going. And Arsene said, look, the truth is we don't have a place in the squad for you and we're letting you go. And that was it. There was no negotiations. There was no, look, we'll keep you around just to be happy. They got rid. So it's quite funny hearing that because now Arsenal obviously likes to keep players around maybe longer than he should in some circumstances. It's quite interesting to hear that back in the day when he first came in, he was very much nat, done, away.
So, he kept that shy talk and Nelka, and how did that work out? Yeah.
But there was also the point with Ian Wright where Ian Wright was disruptive and he actually was... He didn't get on well with Rioch either.
No, he hated him. Absolutely hated him.
Used to being allowed to be cock of the walk of the dressing room under George. George liked Ian. George likes a lad. He liked Ian, and he just let him, if you like, sort of be the cocky little git to Alan Smith's calm faced, intelligent bloke. And of course, Arsene didn't like all his comments, his messing around during training, and not doing what Arsene told him to do. So I think Arsene just thought, right, boss, you're off to West Ham. I don't need this. I mean, what I found very amazing recently is I saw an interview. It was with Amy Lawrence and Ian Wright, John Hartson and Martin Keown and some fucking cunt whose name I won't mention.
Was that where they all sat at a long table?
Yeah, and I thought, how ironic it is that two blokes are sitting there praising him to death. Wenger threw him out the club. You know, he chucked out John Hartson for being, you know, a big
fat, basically
fat, lazy and talentless. And Ian Wright got lodged out for being a troublemaking cocky little git. And they're sitting there and they love him to death. And what I love about Ian Wright, I mean, you could cut him in half and find out he's got Arsenal running. He's like a bit like Rock. He's probably got Arsenal, you know, going around the inside of his spine, but he always calls Wenger boss and hello boss, how are you? But if you ever meet Ian when you're out, as soon as he finds out you're an Arsenal fan, he can't help himself. He's got to give you a hug.
And I met him once in the loos in a nightclub with Mark Bright. We were queuing for a piss and we were talking. And he noticed my little badge. So he said, he's a good, good lad. And we were talking, my mate came up. He said, so I've always wanted to meet you, Ian. So Ian looked at me. I said, yeah, unfortunately, he's a Cockney red. He said, oh, for fuck's sake. He said, I came in here to have a piss. He said, I didn't come in here to talk to shit. Just walked off laughing his head off, you know. That's the sort of bloke Ian is, but, you know.
That's very good. OG's a bit like that. The first thing he does when he meets you is hugs you. So him and Ian are quite similar.
I can confirm that. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, I'm going to start with Jeff again for this next question. From Unique79, having Alexis, Theo and Iwobi taking the pressure off of Ozil of, in quotes, being the main man, this bringing more relaxation to the game and making him play the way that he wants to play, Jeff?
I don't know if it's more relaxing or not. I mean, there's certainly such a fluid front three, four, if you include Ozil. He does still drift a lot around the park, and he's been fantastic. His goal scoring has been fantastic, but his assists have been down, I think, this year, especially compared to last. And, you could look at it a few different ways. It's possible they've tweaked his positioning. He does seem to make that later run into the box now or through the top of the box, which I think that's where some of his goals are coming from. He's coming from deeper. It's hard to say what exactly is actually happening. You don't really know if he's more relaxed, if he's been given different instruction, if he's staying a little bit deeper to allow the front three to move across the pitch. It's hard to say. I don't know if I'd be drawn in any direction with my answer on that question. So, yeah.
Anyone else want to talk about that question? Just nod, and I'm looking at your faces. Any nodding going on? Nodding? Nod? No, Steve? Chris? Of course, we'll always have something to say. Steve,
I think Jeff's covered it, to be honest.
David, do you agree?
Absolutely, I agree.
Oh, is that a Bruce Lee picture behind you, David? It looks like someone doing a ninja punch. Is it? Looks like Bruce Lee going like that. Me.
No, it's a it's a stage show picture, isn't it? I think.
Oh no, it's the Ryder Cup.
Oh yes.
From
super. That there's a Ryder Cup.
The 90s.
Someone doing a punch, you can see the Swiss. Yeah.
Oh, it's a hat.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
Right, next. I think you're looking at Bernard Gallagher with two smaller people in front of him.
That's it. It looks like the white sleeves on Bruce Lee when he did his ninja stuff collars. yes, right.
That's before my time.
While I've got you, David, I'll give you this question. This is from Gooners in USA, whose podcast I'm going on Sunday. A couple of cheeky, chappy Americans. They're quite funny, even though they're Americans. They're very funny, actually. Yes, they've asked me to come on, and I think they're going to be mean to me. Anyway, he says, is there a reason there wasn't a team accountant running onto the pitch at the end of the game the other night with buckets of gold to offer to Alexis and Ozil? That's it.
Take the point exactly entirely. Yeah. You have to say that it's going to cost us an awful lot of money to persuade the two of them to sign on again, because you've got not only a situation where they could earn a fortune anywhere, but also the way that the pound is bombing against other currencies, they're going to want to be able to maintain their spending power back where they live. So we are going to have to get those wheelbarrows of gold out of the bank vault and throw what they want at them. But there's a degree of negotiation, so don't expect that to happen anytime soon.
Stanley, just on that very yes. point, our very own Mr. Simon Collings, two interesting things, actually. He tweeted 12 goals and 6 assists combined from Ozil and Sanchez this season. Time to get the checkbook out. Here. And the other interesting thing, just what David was saying there about, you know, wages and how much it takes to keep players. You'll probably be familiar with the AC Milan goalkeeper, Donnarumma, yeah. If you're not.
He's
17 years of age. He's built like a brick shit house. And he's largely regarded as potentially the next big Italian goalkeeper after Buffon. He's just about to sign a new contract, taking his wages from 3,000 a week to 55,000 a week.
Oh, is that all?
17-year-old. And also, big shout out to Dundalk, who've just taken the lead over Zenit St. Petersburg.
That's a lot of Pokemon you'll be able to buy with that. You know what, these teenagers.
One of the things that is a big point here is that there is a self-regulated wage cap, which actually runs in the Premier League and is relevant to your turnover and the amount of money your wage bill is as a percentage of your turnover. Now, at the moment, although Arsenal have a massive turnover, this does affect Arsenal because the potential amounts of money that we would have to pay to Ozil and Sanchez are so huge that they would push that percentage of the ratio of our wages to the rest of our company's turnover to a point where we would broach the English Premier League's limit. So Mr. Gazidis has got two problems in his hand now. One is he needs to keep two players with a weakening pound thanks to Brexit, who probably are getting paid in euros or dollars in Sanchez's case. The second thing is he needs to increase Arsenal's turnover. Now, luckily, because our commercial revenue is so shit, he could get his finger out of his backside and he could increase it. If you look very carefully, Chelsea have just paid £40 million to resign one shirt deal to go and get that Nike deal over 15 years. We need now to start renegotiating our Puma contract if Puma don't want to pull up a lot more money. £60 million now appears to be the going rate. I'm sure maybe Adidas or someone else will, but we need to get our commercial revenue up because we need to have a turnover of such a size that we can pay a wage bill of the size we need to be able to pay. I'm sure we'll manage it.
I take it we all would not be happy if someone said the only reason Ozil's playing well is because he's playing for a contract. That wouldn't be a nice thing to say, and not true, is it?
No,
if anyone was cynical, there are some people cynical enough to think that.
I did find it a bit rich when you got Wenger on £140,000 a week saying to Sanchez and Ozil that it's not all about money. I did think to myself, are you sure?
These are professional players as well. I mean, you know, it's in their professional outlook to want to win games and want to win trophies. So to say that they're only performing at certain times, I think, is a bit. It's such an easy thing to level. It's like saying, well, you're a heart surgeon and you only do hearts on people you like. I mean, you know, you're there to do a job and you put everything into it. Sure, you have good days and bad days, but I hope heart surgeons don't have bad days, but you get the point. So, no, I think it's a bit rich to say that, to be honest. And even if it is, well, then brilliant. Keep doing it and we'll give you some more money and stick around. Happy days.
Right, we've been going for an hour and 20 minutes. I've got one comment, one question, and then we're done because Mookie's turned up. That's my mum. Turned up to give OG a little hug. And so Kurt Garnett makes a comment. Can we just take a moment to say how good Mustafi has been since coming in? We have looked so solid. I think that is a very good point. And I reckon even if when Pear comes back, he's not going to get his place back because that combination of Mustafi and Koscielny is stunning. Nod if you agree, Jeff. Jeff agrees. That's more than enough. I don't think the offspring agrees, but I don't think she cares. Right. Okay, this last question is going to come from Oscar Arias, A-R-I-A-S. He says, he already asked this question for the radio show, but he wants to hear our answer. Can we now beat the big teams like Bayern Munich, Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid and Barcelona in the knockout rounds at this time and point? I think he means playing the way we do. What do you reckon, Jeff?
Well, it's been pointed out a few times that it is only October. We're beating teams we should be beating at this point. I think maybe the one exception was that exceptional performance against Chelsea. It was fantastic. But you know, we've been beating teams that are a little bit lower down. It's easy to get a little bit carried away, but yeah, you know, why not? The squad does seem to be stronger than it has been in recent years. I think that last question about Mustafi, he looks like he's played his whole life at the Arsenal. He's looked really good how he's bedded in. He had a defensive mix-up on the weekend, but no, he's looked solid. The way Sanchez is playing up front, you know, creating goals, scoring goals, if Ozil can keep scoring goals, and how about Theo Walcott? I mean, it's like he's a completely different animal from last year. His movement, his commitment, his strength on the ball, and his finishing has been terrific. And, you know, long may that continue. You know, if we can keep that going, if we can avoid injuries, and we can keep winning games, Sure, why not? I think we're as good as any without, you know, getting totally carried away, because it is only October and we've just beaten Ludo Goretz.
Right, David, if you want to take that. Did you lot see what I wrote in the window? Then Steve, and then you can answer the question, Chris, and you can wrap it up.
Yeah, cool, no worries.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the last 6 years when we have gone out in the round of 16, we have been capable of beating anywhere in a one-off game. What we've failed to close out is beating them over two. A feeling maybe we've got a little bit more about us, but you would still make a second favourite if we pull Barca or Bayern. Not necessarily Real Madrid, but... the quarter final.
Sorry, I was waiting for David to finish then.
Yeah, I think he did finish, didn't you, David?
It went quiet.
He's smiling.
He's smiling. Go on, Steve.
Have you finished, David?
Yes. Go on, Steve.
You're on mute, Steve, if you're talking.
I have reservations about this, to be honest. I think Dave's right. We can beat people in one-off games. We beat Bayern, fantastic performance. But, you know, we didn't close them out over two games. And when you see stupid mistakes in the first half against Swansea, and that dicky period last night, just sort of like 10 minutes before, 15 minutes before half-time, and then that attack, which Koscielny dived in, cleared the ball, and that ball went straight up the pitch for Ozil to score. Those moments like that, if you fuck up like that against Atletico Madrid or against Bayern, you will get murdered. Or against Barcelona, you will get murdered. Real Madrid, they aren't what they used to be. I think we could beat them over two games, no problem. And probably Dortmund as well. Bayern last night absolutely crucified the team they were playing, and they were toying with them in the end. It was like watching a cat with a sparrow that it had caught, slowly murdering it and torturing it on the ground. So, you know, we've got the squad, we've got the equipment, but they have to be at their very best, and they have to concentrate for a whole 95 minutes. And they have to, this is a big thing. You get very few chances at that level. So when you get them, they've got to be finished, and you've got to not give them chances. So for me, still a big question mark, but we're in it and you've got a chance. The most amusing thing is that we might not draw Bayern Munich. Middlesex might get them.
Which would be funny. To draw a line, I agree with a lot of what the guys have said. I think it's... I think there's a good opportunity there for us if we can keep this succession going, the successive wins going, or this run that we're on going. I haven't been massively impressed with too many sides. I watched a lot of Manchester City last night, and it's really, really strange to say Man City were actually not bad, but Barcelona, you know, were pretty poor but scored four goals, basically because Man City just offered them up, at least three of them. So Barca weren't exactly amazing. I agree, Bayern overall were dominant on PSV, but there's reservations about them. Real Madrid, never really fully convinced. Atletico Madrid are a tough nut to crack, but and we've already covered PSG. So, you know, I do think there's an opportunity for us to go deep in the competition. I'm going to call this now, and it's a bit controversial. I think we're going to get a completely unusual winner this season. I don't know why. I just have this sneaky feeling. Leicester, well, who knows? I think Monaco will go quite far as well this year. I'm a bit biased, but they've really impressed me.
The sooner Tottenham draw Barcelona and get murdered, the better.
Oh, it'll be hilarious, Steve. I don't know what I want more. Spurs to crash out at the group stage and end up on Thursday nights again and draw Man United so the two could just have a fuck-off fest. Or whether, as you say, we could get them against somebody like... Or Atletico Madrid and just let Simeone kick the shit out of them over two legs. I mean, that would be equally quite enjoyable. But or alternatively, their whole stadium just fall apart and then fuck off the planet. Yeah, would be...
My original dream of them drawing Legia Warsaw and being set light to in Eastern Europe, unfortunately, now is not possible. But, you know,
no, But the dream lives on next season, and we can't.
Well, probably not, as Legia Warsaw are probably going to be banned after they tried to set lights at Real Madrid last night.
Fair point. We'll have to get another Polish team in. We'll make this dream happen. But no, I think we've got a good chance. And the one thing I would say is our football suits European games. It always has. And it's, I think there has been a mental blockage. And I think maybe, just maybe, some of our players are getting over that hurdle, or they have done so far this season. And if we get the right draw, who knows? Because there'll be a lot of teams in Europe that won't fancy drawing us on the current form. I can say that much. So here's hoping. Right. Okay. Danny, you've got the family round, I can see. So
we've been going about an hour and 30 minutes nearly. Good timing.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, I just killed a little fly as well, like a fucking ninja.
Hong Kong Fui.
We'll finish then with some predictions. And,
no, we don't have to do predictions. I've got nowhere to write them down. No, we'll just do shout outs.
Okay. Bollocks to predictions then. Okay, shout outs.
Don't forget, send me your prediction to the podcast account, because otherwise you lot don't get a prediction and your team is doing terrible this season, listeners and ex-guests.
Not good enough. Okay, let's do shout outs. Let's start with David and work our way backwards. Go on, David.
Okay, mine's going to a guy on Twitter who's called at Mr. John Friend. All one word, for the simple reason that his hometown Eastleigh have drawn my hometown Swindon in the first round of the FA Cup, and it's live on BBC.
Oh, awesome. Taunton Town have got in as well. It's amazing. We're all getting in. Superb. Steve, who have you got for us?
My shout out to a lady called Mrs. Petite, and you can find her at JMLAFC12. So, a fervent, very nice lady who agrees with my assertion that Philip Green, because he's going to have his knighthood taken away from him, should be hung by his testicles off a traitor's gate after he's had all his assets removed. And what more could you ask for from an Arsenal fan, really? Splendid business.
Super. Can't beat that. Danny, I'm going to leave the best for last, obviously. Have you got anybody you want to nudge and wink to?
A couple of things. Firstly, to Gimli and Kate, congratulations on what they told me the other day. I'm leaving it at that, and they're both missed.
I didn't know if we could mention it or not.
That's I'm not saying what happened. They got away with murder. Dropped up charges. And the other one, to one of the 400 that I follow on Twitter, Curtis, who is at CLG_the_BFA. Him and his Mrs. Elisa both got married on the 15th of October this year. And if you go and have a look at his Twitter, I'm going to go and retweet it in a minute. You can go and have a look for his timeline. Him and his Mrs. walked into the reception wearing his and her Arsenal named home kits. True gooners. There you go. Well done, Curtis. And everyone's going to go and I'm going to retweet it now. So everyone just go and have a look at it and give Curtis and Elisa a little bit of love, but not too much love, because he looks like he might whack you.
Can I just give an extra shout out to Sterling on his hilarious interview last night with Canal Plus, where he was basically in tears after the interview asked him about how did he feel after the two red cards and being, quote, thrashed off the pitch.
Claudio Bravo, my word, that was something. That really was something.
I think he's been made president of the Almunia fan club.
I believe he has. Morris dancing all the way.
He will be in line for Peyton's job. You realise this?
He'll be coaching Jack in 2 years' time. Oh God, there's a thought. Right, I'll leave. I'll do mine, and then I'll leave the best for last with Jeff. My shout out, I'll come back afterwards, but my shout out, it goes to VAR, actually, who's at V6 Studios. She is Kat's partner, who's at Koi Gooner's Girl. She made me this fantastic flag. Look at this, look. It's a pirate badge, and it's a full size flag.
Excellent.
Hand painted. Wow. And she sent me that in the mail. From Chicago, all the way from Chicago. It's awesome. I absolutely love it. A lot of hard work.
I've got the camera on you.
Oh, have you? Do you want me to wave it again? There you go. Look, there we go. And what better time to send me this on the week that we at the weekend we went top of the league.
I say.
Yes, from 3-0 down. from 3-0 down, won 5-3 with two goals in the last minute. And I'm gonna announce this on live YouTube. I have to confess, I did a Mourinho. I went down that touchline like a bat out of hell.
Did you give the wanker sign?
No, but I should have, shouldn't I? Really? But it's fantastic, and we're doing very well. So we are. But my only other shout out, which I'll leave across to Jeff, is of course to Jeff, just for being the nicest man in the world ever. It is a fact; he is an absolute gent, and it was a pleasure to meet him. And indeed, Jason and all the crew, Mr. Fife as well. Just a magnificent day, and this is what it's all about at the end of the day. You know, we sit here and we do this podcast every week and we talk to our lovely listeners, and it's, you know, it's fantastic. But meeting these guys in public and having somebody come halfway around the world and want to meet us is really humbling. So I'll hand it over to the great man himself to finish us off, if you pardon the expression. Jeff, the floor is yours, sir.
Cheers, Chris. It's been a fantastic week. It's been a trip of a lifetime. And just when you think it can't get any better, it gets better. So first of all, just a shout out to all the gentlemen of a Bird Camp Wonderland who joined me on the weekend. I'm not going to go through everyone, so just go follow everyone that's associated with the pod, the radio, and the blogs, and you're covered. It was a fantastic weekend. A special thanks to Fife for hosting a lot of my events. He's a legend. He was very upset I have called everyone else a legend, so he's a legend. I'd also like to specifically single out Neil, who's with the radio crew, so Chimp at Chimp the Gooner. He brought me an autographed jersey last night. It was a bit of a surprise from Jack, which may be a collector's item at some point. So you never know. But so thank you, Neil. Appreciate it. It was absolutely lovely meeting you. But my shout out goes to Danny and Gim, because without them tapping away at their little buttons in their homes, of which I'm in one right now. See, I'm on two cameras at once. None of this would have been possible, which is basically a bunch of friends talking the Arsenal. And you're right, it doesn't get any better than that. So cheers, Danny and Gim. I really appreciate it, and I've had a wonderful time. And for those of you around on the weekend, I'll be up at Borough. So hopefully we'll see you there.
Superb. What a way to end it. And as we can say, as we always say, if you do like what we do and you want to give us a little bit of love, you can give us a thumbs up in the YouTube, or you could leave us an iTunes review. I don't know if you even follow those, Danny, but people could do that if they want to do that. And as we always say, really, this show is nothing without you guys. We do really, really appreciate it. So there we go. So that was a Bird Camp Wonderland. Just remains for me to thank our panelists, obviously Jeff and Danny, and absent Gimli, David, Steve, and of course I have been your host. Thank you all very much for listening. Keep it Arsenal. Keep it tuned to us. We'll be back with a radio show after the Middlesbrough game. And Danny's going to just say those magical words.
Thank you so much. Nanny, you cheeky monkeys.
And keep it Arsenal. Good night, everybody.
Teed me up and you weren't even finished.
I know.
Bearing in mind you kept us waiting while you and Jeff ate sweet and sour testicles with
that's a very good point.
Fried lice, and you got a fucking cheek, to be honest.
How dare you? Right. Thank you very much, everybody.
Hey, all right. Good timing, fellas. Well done.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Cheers, guys.
See you later, guys. Have a good time with the rest of your time here, Jeff.
Yeah, cheers, Steve.
All right, I'm going to press stop now.
I'll see you Saturday, Jeff.
Yeah, you bet. Up and down on the fools running up, flexing, call us the streets, and even down the hell on the bears, which whenever we need a protection, the 2 G's, the stronger 2 B's, before all these marks, perpetrators and one of these, you're straight high siding like a G in your ride, so I'ma give them a little something to bump at the side, yeah. Something for the OGs, something for the OGs, this is how it should be done, yeah. Something for the OGs, something for the OGs, I had to give y'all one, it's for my homies, something for the OGs, something for the OGs, this is how it should be done, yeah. Something for the OGs, till this day, it's still around, lasting year after year. Now when it began, mama said it was a hobby, but it could never be a career. But that didn't stop me, I had to go for mine, till it became where I went. I was thinking of writing rhymes, studying styles.
my safety, I was good. And every chance I got, I battled the rappers around the hood. People now consensus of Run DMC. And I said to myself, they're no better than me. Just a little more work and a little more living, cause a true OG can always get with them. Keeping the fist to my chest and my head up high. And this for the OGs who's still alive. Something for the OGs. At the park and wheel the deal on the course till it was dark. Some way, somehow, the funk beats to get started doing nervous. I mean, they mom and dad used to barbecue. Nothing else to do was no problem we never faced. And if we got bored, me and my partners used to race. I go to the mall to see if we can get a number. And later that evening, sneak over on the under. The weather was fine and all the good for in the bike. A short spill, no money by one, cause it was like a sport. Chilling at the beaches, barbecues, picnics, pooping out the pumps and bumps to go up in it. And all you heard was rap coming out of my truck. Still in our hearts.